You've reached the end of your pregnancy. Your due date has passed and still no baby. Fortunately, there are some safe, non-invasive ways to give your baby a gentle nudge down the birth canal. I'm Dawn Thompson, doula and founder of ImprovingBirth.org, and today we'll explore ways to induce your labor naturally. This is Preggy Pals, episode 10.
Is that a plus sign?
Pink or blue?
Hospital or home birth?
What type of food should I be eating?
I think I just peed myself.
I'm pregnant, and I have to exercise.
What pregnancy glow?
Wait, was that a contraction?
Gotta make these pants fit. I've got kinkles.
What do you mean there's more than one?
You've got the symptoms, and now you've got the support you need for a happy 9 months. This is Preggy Pals, your pregnancy, your way.
Welcome to Preggy Pals, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. I'm your host, Sunny Galt. We would love for you to become part of our show. Simply visit our website, preggypals.com, for more information. You can send us comments or suggestions through the contact link on our website, or you can call the Preggy Pals hotline at 619-866-4775. Preggy Pals is also looking for pregnant women to join our blogging team. Send us an email through our website if you're interested. All right, let's start with our introductions. And Kelly, why don't you kick things off?
Hi, I'm Kelly. I am a kindergarten teacher. I'm due end of June 23rd with our first, and it's going to be a surprise. We don't know, boy or girl, and we are having a natural home birth.
Hi, I'm Cherry. I work in market research. I'm also due on the 23rd of June. It is our first. We are also waiting for the surprise, and we're planning a home birth.
You guys are so patient, waiting for your baby's gender and having a home birth. I'm like, get the baby out now. I'm in awe, really.
You know what? It's funny because there are people who still ask me all the time about how can you be waiting? How can you be waiting? And it's like, well, at this point, I've waited so long. What's an extra 4 or 5 weeks? It's nothing,
yeah,
you know?
That's true.
And it's exciting. It's actually, the longer I waited, the more exciting it's become.
That's how
Do you feel that too?
Yeah.
That there's almost, and what's really funny is I've actually been watching these random videos on YouTube of these women having these home births where it's like a couple minutes after the baby's out and all of a sudden someone's like, oh, what is it? And like the mom hasn't even looked. Like they're so just caught up in the baby. They're like, oh, and you see them lifting the baby up. Oh, it's a boy. But it's amazing because I think people expect that that's going to be the first second the baby's out. Mm-hmm. And it's, you
it's
know,
so not.
Before we start today's show, here are some fabulous maternity fashion trends.
Hello, Preggy Pals. I am Crystal Stubendeck, maternity fashion expert and founder of Borrow for Your Bump, where you can buy or rent designer maternity styles for a monthly rate. Celebrities have a way of making things look easy. Jennifer Garner, January Jones, J-Lo are all the latest celebrities to sport bumps and look good doing it. Sure, they have a team of stylists, but in this segment, we are going to share their maternity style secrets. First, shop for transitional pieces that will take you beyond 9 months. Long gone are the days of the pleated blouse that screams maternity. The time has come where many designers are creating styles that can be worn beyond the expecting 9 months. For example, a dress with an empire waist is great throughout pregnancy and even post-baby. Most empire waist dress styles are made of a stretchy or flowing materials and also include an adjustable belt that is great for comfort, creating curves, and adjusting to your changing body size. You can often include items out of your closet, too, that will fit your new shape. Think open cardigans and long tunics. Second, don't forget to show off your assets. Just because you are pregnant does not mean you need to cover yourself up in a muumuu. As your bump grows, so will other parts of your body, and it is time to show it off. If you've never had cleavage before, try a V-neck top or dress. Or if you are still a little self-conscious of all the changes up top, you always have your fabulous legs, which can be shown off in a maternity mini dress. We like the shirt dress by Maternal America. This V-neck above-the-knee dress offers some alternative coverage with 3/4 sleeves and is available in heather red or navy colors. Third secret is give yourself some shape. Not all maternity styles are form-fitting. Sometimes a cute tent dress can be just as flattering. Just don't forget the power of a belt. By adding a belt below the bust, you create an empire waist, which is the most flattering look for a growing bump. Don't forget that belts can work under the bump, too. Try this look with fun tunics and long tees and even maxi skirts. A perfect celebrity role model that rocks the belt with different looks is Tori Spelling, who can be named as an expert of pregnancy. She just had baby number 3, and just 6 weeks after giving birth is pregnant again. Just remember, don't cinch that belt too tight. Being stylish is making it look easy and comfortable, not painful. Keep your signature style. If you are known as the edgy dresser, don't stop looking the part just because you are expecting. You make it work by substituting those sky-high skinny heels and mini dress for some flat, over-the-knee boots and a shorter tent dress. And if you can still pull off the outrageous 6-inch heels like J-Lo did throughout her third trimester, well, then you go, girl. If you want to make your edgy look comfortable, just pair skinny jeans, a fitting tee, and a blazer. This is also a fun time to experiment with some new looks without getting too crazy with the acid wash jeans. You can create a retro look as simple as adding a red lip and a sweeping hairstyle to some black skinny jeans and a white tee. Think Gwen Stefani. Or get into the summer love look by wearing a comfortable maxi and flat sandals. You can add a headband or side braid if you really want to complete a hippie chick look, but be careful if you are petite though, because sometimes a long maxi and a bump can be overwhelming to such a small frame. Overall, get comfortable with a new look, whether it's with bold makeup or a skinny jean. Try one trend at a time, and once you get comfortable, you can start mixing and matching and even trying bolder looks. By adding a few of these style secrets, you will feel fabulous in new trends with the confidence of an A-list celebrity. Don't forget to check out more celebrity styles at borrowforyourbump.com and be sure to listen to Preggy Pals for more great pregnancy tips.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's skylightcal.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
You've waited 9 months for your baby, and despite being past your due date, your baby still has not made his grand debut. There are many wives' tales about ways you can induce your labor, but what really works? Does anything really work? And is it safe for you and your baby? Dawn Thompson, a doula and founder of ImprovingBirth.org, is here to help us separate fact from fiction. Welcome, Dawn.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Okay. So first of all, maybe we should just ask the general question. Are there ways to safely induce your labor naturally?
Well, I think that there's probably a question of safe, yes. You know, I think whether or not you get what you would like to have happen is a whole nother question altogether.
Okay. So there are things we can do that aren't going to harm us, but are they really going to get that baby out?
Exactly.
And does it depend on our bodies too?
Absolutely. It depends on whether or not you're really ready. You know, a good portion, like something like 72% of first-time moms go 7 to 10 days past their due date.
Wow.
And so if you're trying at your due date, probably not going to work. If you are close, really close to giving birth, and usually I would say only to do the majority of these things if your body is showing signs. So like you're already having irritable uterus, meaning like it's contracting often, but nothing that's consistent and sending you on to the next level.
Right.
But if you've got nothing going on, most of these things are absolutely useless.
Mm. I did hear someone told me, I think it was actually my last OB, told me that even though it was my second child, that the baby, you know, didn't have any chance necessarily of coming earlier. You know, you hear that, oh, well, it's your second child, so you probably won't go past your due date. What has been your experience with that, Dawn? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that, there's no way to pinpoint that at all. And
yeah.
It's, you know, there's probably statistics that show that some second time babies come like right around the due date.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a longer cycle generally, you know, if your natural cycle is 30 days, you're probably going to go to 41 weeks at least. And that ranges true for women who are first-time moms too. If you have a longer cycle, you're going to have a longer gestation probably.
Okay.
So that's something, unfortunately, that that little wheel doesn't take into account.
The
magic wheel that spits out. You know what? Okay, you know what amazes me about that magic wheel, by the way, is that three different people have given me three different dates with the same magic wheel. Yeah. So I don't know how much magic there
so
is in the wheel.
It's not very magical. No, it's like the magic eight ball. No, it doesn't really work.
Because they're all asking for the same. They're all asking me for the same thing. The first day of my last period. And that didn't, I didn't give them three different days. So I don't buy that.
Well, and the problem with the due date is that it was never meant to be an exact science. It was meant to be an estimate. And really the original person who did the 40 weeks thing with the due date also prefaced that it was, you know, a 2 week window, you
on
know,
either
of
side,
40
right?
to 42 weeks, you know, and so it was never meant to be an exact science. So it's always kind of crazy when people expect their babies to come on the day that they're due or even a day after, or, you know, I mean, statistically speaking, it just doesn't happen. It's a very, very small percentage of women who have their babies on their birth, on their due date.
So many people have asked me, when are you due? When are you due? And I say, oh, in June. And but when? I'm in June. And it's like, you know, it frustrates them. But I'm like, in June, you know, give or take, second, third week, somewhere around.
I want an exact date.
I don't want to, you know, but it's funny how other people feel like they have to have the exact date. And I'm like, are you writing this down so that you can call me on my due date to see if I'm in labor or something?
It's true.
You know?
Or check Facebook.
Yeah,
in labor yet.
Which is part of the reason why I just say June.
I always tell people to turn off their cell phones after their due date because going to get 25 calls every single day.
That's
that baby here yet?
Exactly. So what are some good reasons for inducing our own labor? I mean, are there bad reasons? I mean, obviously, we do want to wait till we're past our due dates, right? Because then,
absolutely.
Yeah, you can get in trouble there.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the other important thing to consider is that are you staring at your 42 weeks? That, to me, would be the only time to try natural induction processes. Or if you are really, you know, irritable, you're just not sleeping, you're, you know, all of those things at the end, that might be an okay time to do it. But typically I would say don't do any of these things until you are at least 41 weeks past. You know, okay. I mean, you can do some of these silly things that we're going to talk about, you know, eating pineapple and spicy foods. Go for it. You might deal with heartburn, ladies. But, you know, I mean, that's certainly not going to. The only harm that will do is, you know, probably give you heartburn.
And have you helped women in the past induce themselves, or what's your policy on that?
Sure. You know, I mean, there's definitely, I think that I've learned more over the years, and I'm certainly less inclined to do it. I'll just share, you know, one experience of a mama that was first time mom. She was 2 days past her due date, desperately wanting to, you know, go into labor. And she called me and said, what do you think about doing castor oil? And I said, don't do it. You know, it absolutely can cause an irritable uterus, because what it does is it irritates the bowels, which will in fact give you diarrhea. The diarrhea then irritates the uterus, which sometimes then can make it go into labor or then start contracting. The problem with it is it often will hyperstimulate the uterus. And this was exactly, she hung up the phone with me and did it anyways.
Oh, no.
And I wound up being with her for 36 hours because she did, in fact, go into labor. And she went into like 3 minute apart surges that were, you know, to her, very, very powerful. And in the end, they couldn't get it to, you know, it never went away. It just lasted for, you know, 2 days. And, you know, and that when you see that sort of thing, you just think, don't do it. It's not worth it.
Right.
If you are staring at, I say castor oil, it can absolutely work. And if you're staring down at that 42 weeks and you're with an OBGYN and you know that you're having to fight for every minute, hour, day to not have an induction with Pitocin, then so, you know, go down the whole list.
Right.
That's the only time I would recommend it.
Okay.
And that was what was recommended to me. This was sort of if you know that, you know, you're like a day away from being induced, mm-hmm. and you want to avoid that, then that's like the last resort would be the castor oil.
And I want to be really clear, unless it's medically indicated, 42 weeks, that's the deadline, not 41 weeks, not 41 weeks and 2 days, 42 weeks. That's what ACOG says. That's what all the journals put out. But unfortunately, many OBGYNs do not practice that way.
And is that because the placenta starts to deteriorate at that point?
There is a possibility of it, but unless there's signs showing that that's happening, mm-hmm. most placentas are just fine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then is it the baby's size? Because that was one thing that had been told to me, is that they were worried about the baby getting too big if it's staying in there for too long.
Well, there used to be, you know, the thought that the babies would gain a half a pound a week, and that's absolutely not true. You're talking about a couple of ounces. And if you see, you know, as a doula, we see a child that's 7 pounds, 2 ounces, and we see a child that's 7 pounds, 8 ounces, you can't tell the difference.
Mm-hmm.
There's not, you know, when you're talking about the physiological portion of the body, the head is not growing.
Right.
Right? The chub, which is very squishy and moves right through the vaginal canal just fine, doesn't change.
Yeah.
The head circumference,
that's a good point,
doesn't,
yeah,
change, which is the biggest part of the baby that's coming through.
Okay.
So the whole, the baby's getting too big, is totally
bogus.
You're
not going to go from a 7 pound baby to a 10 pound baby
in a
waiting
week,
in a week,
no,
or two.
Or a couple, yeah, of days even.
Yeah.
No.
It's, right.
I mean, even if you were waiting from 40 weeks to 42 weeks, you're probably still not going to get this.
Yeah.
You know, your body knows what to do, ladies.
Really,
it's just mom's begging to be.
I'm done, please. That's exactly what it most of
no
the time
more.
It is. Yeah.
Well, let's talk about what's happening within the body when labor does start. I mean, medically, Dawn, what happens within our bodies to kind of kickstart that labor process?
Well, there's an intricate hormone, you know, thing that happens that we really don't clearly understand.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not sure if the baby releases the hormone or the mom releases the hormone, but somebody releases the hormone that triggers the labor. And, you know, if you, that's the problem with synthetic induction, right, or doing Pitocin, is that you're forcing the body by putting Pitocin or a synthetic form of the drug, but it's not coming from the brain, and the baby has not released potentially the hormones that they need to release in order to give birth.
Okay.
So that's why Pitocin is so dangerous. The other thing that I've experience too is with a mama that you know, was being induced for preeclampsia, is that her body, you know, your body's also sending off all of these hormones beyond the beyond the oxytocin. It's this huge intricate dance, right? And a lot of those are relaxants. And when you're having an induction at 40 weeks or 39 weeks, which is unfortunately very frequent these days, your body hasn't gotten all the relaxants to allow the pelvis to open. So a lot of these women will dilate to 8, 9, 10 centimeters, but their baby can't come down. And then they're told, oh, it's because your pelvis was too small, your baby was too big. No one says it's actually because we artificially started this labor. Your body is not giving out all the hormones that it needs to open and relax and open your vagina and open your pelvis. And so your pelvis is static. It's staying in the same place because it doesn't have all the relaxants to do that. So whenever you're triggering even some of these imitation things, you're still, you know, or some of these supposedly safe things, you're still running the same risk.
Mm. So what do we do if women are in that position? How do we avoid something like that?
Well, you wait for your body to do what it's supposed to do.
Unless the doctor's like, no, it's coming out now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, yeah, for sure. I mean, if you're dealing with that and you're looking at 42 weeks, there is some risks once you pass 42 weeks.
Yeah.
But that's the key, is the risks go up when you pass 42 weeks, not 41 weeks, mm-hmm. not 40 weeks,
right.
42 weeks.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited to dive into some of these ways to induce labor. When we come back, we're going to discuss the most common ways women try to induce their labor. And we're going to find out if any of these ways actually work. We'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everyone. We are talking about ways to induce labor naturally, which I think there's probably a lot of women out there who are at the end of their due date or a couple weeks past that are like, come on, guys, let's get this baby out. So what are some of the common ways, Dawn, that women try to induce their labor, and is it safe?
Well, let's go through some of these, you know, this list of things, because some of these things have great, incredible benefits that beyond induction. So one of the first things here listed is acupuncture. Acupuncture has a lot of amazing benefits beyond induction. It gets the body flowing in all the right directions. But it's probably probably one of the most effective ways that I've seen labor get going is through acupuncture. Acupuncture is also really great for helping with breech babies and things of that nature. Having sex and having orgasm, and just so you know that those can be two separate things, and sometimes they need to be separate things. I encourage my mamas to have, you know, get a little comfortable with yourself, and because orgasm sends oxytocins through your body, and if your body is ready, it can in fact trigger labor. Not to mention the benefits of having intercourse is that there's the prostaglandins in your husband's semen, mm-hmm. Is great up against your cervix. It can help melt away your cervix. So, you know, there's lots of great things, but again, the oxytocin is the number one thing for sex and orgasm. So, absolutely number one thing to keep doing at the end of pregnancy is when a lot of women stop doing it.
No matter how big and awkward and huge it feels.
Absolutely sounds like the worst one.
I know, right? But listen, I'll tell you
That's what got the baby in for most people. Know, right? So that's going to get the baby out.
But listen, it's self-stimulation though, because it's really more about the orgasm than it is about intercourse. Okay. So, I mean, the prostaglandins are nice in the semen, but the orgasm is really the key. And so even if it's more comfortable to get, you know, have self-stimulation and not have your husband involved, that's really okay. Or have him involved, but that it's a clitoral stimulation and not necessarily an internal orgasm is totally fine. Nipple stimulation is great. It can also, again, though, hyperstimulate the uterus. So being careful, just, you know, mild stimulation. The great thing about nipple stimulation is that if it does start labor and it gets a little too intense, you just stop doing it and it typically will back off the surges.
Okay. Not to be too graphic with that, but a question. Yeah. I mean, what I keep seeing nipple stimulation. I hear about it. What does that really involve?
We're tuning in Tokyo.
Is it just when you're a kid? Is it more of a pinch or
No, it's a twisting, turning. You know, like okay. I mean, it's definitely you can't.
Is it supposed to feel good?
I forgot we're on radio. I can't.
You can't just like play with your boobs.
This is I'm missing out on what's going on in here today.
No, but I mean, it's definitely more aggressive.
Okay.
Yeah. Is it supposed to feel good?
No.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, no. I think that's a big, because when you hear stimulation, I think a lot of times people think it's supposed to feel good.
Well, I mean, I suppose it could. You know, I think it depends on where you are.
That.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends on where you are mentally, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I absolutely think that you know, it could feel good, but I'm just saying, like, to be effective, that it's typically.
Is this something
harder.
We're doing for 30 seconds, 30 minutes? Like,
it depends on what you're trying to get going. You know, okay. I mean, it depends on nipple stimulation is usually used when labor is already in progress and has kind of died down a little bit. Not so much for getting labor started.
Okay. Gotcha. Okay.
But it can stimulate.
So you would know pretty
labor.
Quickly if it is helping or if it
absolutely.
Isn't. You would be able to tell if there's.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. Long walks, galloping. I'm not sure.
I saw galloping online. There was actually a video on it. If you guys Google it,
like,
I think
like galloping, like horse galloping.
Well, not riding a horse,
big
but
pregnant women just
skipping.
Galloping.
Yeah, right. Skipping along
their big valley.
You know, I don't. I think what happens with that is what it does is it helps bring the baby into the pelvis. Okay. The jiggling, and that's probably, you know, I mean, you could probably obtain that many other ways other than galloping. You know, I imagine your baby's getting a little jarred in there and it probably wouldn't be that pleasant. But, you know, I would much rather see mom do lunges, you know, like we call it the Captain Morgan lunge, where, you know, the Captain Morgan bottle, right? He's got his leg up on the chair barrel, actually. So, you know, in those situations, you want your belly facing forward and your leg out to the side. And what that does is it helps open your pelvis. And if you lean in, so like if you're using a chair or whatever, and you lean in to the chair with your, you know, your knee going to the back of the chair, making sure you're holding on to the chair, ladies, because your balance is a little crazy. But what that does is it really helps open the pelvis and get the baby in the pelvis. And then in turn, what that does is that then it puts the baby's pressure, the head of the baby's head against the cervix, which then can cause labor to start because it helps start releasing prostaglandin.
Okay. Swimming.
I don't know that that's an induction. I think that it's a fantastic thing to do. to relieve pressure.
What about just getting like your heart rate up? I think this is kind of where they're going with some of this, whether it's the long walks or galloping.
I don't know that that really does much,
getting your heart rate up.
No, I think that it's certainly a lovely thing to do at the end of pregnancy, though, to release all the pressures on the body. It feels great to be in there. Right. It's a great thing to do if your baby's in a funky position, though. Mm. Dangling the belly in the water. Because ultimately gravity works, right? And if your baby's posterior, or if you've got a breech baby, swimming is fantastic.
Oh, nice. Okay, good.
Yeah, I would just in general be a little bit, I know I've heard so many things that involve exercise and that sort of thing, but for someone like Kelly and I who are doing this at home and unmedicated, I'd be worried. You know, people say go for this great long hike, and like then I get home and now I'm exhausted, and now I'm going into labor, and now I need all my energy. Right. But you know what? I just hiked for the last 3 hours.
Yeah, so it's totally true.
I would want to try and do something that was like a little less strenuous first.
For sure. I mean, I would say go for a walk on the beach.
Yeah,
you know, something
peaceful
that's super
and relaxing.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and I suppose that people who are listening across
in Kansas,
the country are not.
Nice,
walk in the woods,
San Diego. So, anyways, let's talk. Stretching, squatting. I just talked about that. Absolutely, because again, what this is doing, bouncing on the birth ball.
Is that different to the squatting? Is that going to produce different
results?
No, it's
essentially. It's essentially the exact same thing. You're getting the pelvis open, and what happens is it allows the baby to drop into the pelvis, which then puts pressure on the cervix, which then can trigger everything to get going. Meditation, visualization, and telling your baby to come out. I don't know that this is an induction, but it certainly can help from an emotional standpoint. A lot of times there's emotional barriers. There's fear that can absolutely prevent labor from coming. And so I think that that's really important to do from a mental standpoint. It's not necessarily going to induce the labor, you know, but it's certainly a healthy practice no matter what.
I thought it was interesting to tell your baby to come out. You know, it's like, is the baby really listening? But like you said, it's more of a process for you to
absolutely
be like, okay, this is going to happen. This is natural.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that it puts you in a place of being ready, you know, because by telling your baby that you're ready, that you're ready, that's part of the getting ready process, right? Is going like, okay, I'm embracing this, because ultimately you have to embrace labor to come. You have to. It's as much mental in the beginning as it is physical.
Sure.
Let's see. Pressure points. So this is probably the thing that I use the most as a doula. If I have a mama that's having a lot of irritable surges, and like they were up the whole night before with surges that kept waking them up, and I call them surges instead of contractions. So just a nicer
same
word.
Thing.
Yeah. If, you know, there's a lot of that and they've been having it for days on end, I will come over and do pressure points for them, including with a foot massage or whatever, just to help. Sometimes it's to help them just relax. And that will do it enough, but then also working the pressure points. But that absolutely works.
Well, now what are pressure points? Are there specific areas of the bodies you just apply pressure to?
Yeah, absolutely. There's pressure points. It has to do with acupuncture or acupressure points in your body. And if you go online, you can pretty much just do acupressure points for labor and you'll get a whole slew of them and with directions on where they are. Probably the most common one is on the inside of the leg, about 3 inches up from the ankle bone. That's probably the very number one spot. And it's very easy to find because there's a dent in your leg. And when you're at the end of pregnancy,
we're all looking at our legs.
And when you're at the end of pregnancy, it's very tender.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, you know, there's going to be directions on how to use that. But that's really great also if your labor is kind of stalling. That's a fantastic way to keep in instead of, you know, if you're going to if you're in the hospital or at home and they're starting to talk other induction that is not so natural. This is a great way place to go first.
Great.
The spicy food, you know, I mean, it's one of those old wives' tales. Spicy eggplant.
You hear it all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's somebody who said, and I, you know, I mean, this is kind of obscure, but I've heard that there's some sort of enzyme in the eggplant and in the pineapple. There's discussion here that could potentially do some things, but you know, I often think it's just a coincidence.
Yeah.
You know, because you hear of people who will have it, you know, I'm eating the spicy food. I had a spicy eggplant 3 nights in a row, you know, and it's not doing anything. And then you've got the person who like, I totally had spicy eggplant and then here I am in labor.
Right.
You know, and you just kind of go, okay, well, I think it's just coincidental. At least that's my belief, but
and
who
knows?
And
isn't it kind of related, almost a milder version of the castor oil? You're just getting your intestines moving.
It's probably true.
Possibly giving yourself diarrhea.
That's probably true. That's probably true. Yeah, and castor oil is definitely, you know, wow. That can really cause a lot of challenges. And beyond the fact that it can hyperstimulate your uterus, which is usually the side effect that happens, but also the diarrhea that comes along with it. There's lots of different fallacies about how much you should take.
I was just going to say, how much?
A spoonful is it. I mean, I've seen women who have taken half a bottle,
and that is
not
recommended. How do you even choke that down?
Well, most people put it in juice, juice or whatever. But if you are going to do it, and if you're at 42 weeks and you're getting a tremendous amount of pressure to, you know, like tomorrow at 7 a.m., you're going to be induced with Pitocin, then by all means, go for the castor oil. You know, I mean, but understand that there are definitely some negative side effects to that. And having explosive diarrhea during labor is probably not going to be your favorite thing to have happen. Cohosh, you absolutely can get that sort of thing over the counter at Henry's or Jimbo's.
What in the world is it? It's an herb.
It is an herb.
It's like blue and black cohosh.
Yeah, blue and black cohosh. But I would never recommend doing that without a prescription from, or not a prescription, but a recommendation from your midwife or OB. Although OBs typically don't. So I would go, if you are with an OB, I would go to a naturopath and get clear directions on how to use it and when to use it. It's another thing that can absolutely be successful. If it's your second or third baby, it can be extremely successful and you know, baby in the car on the side of the road kind of successful.
Oh,
so you
got to
be really careful with it and take it appropriately. And then, but the other thing, great thing about it is that it will not work unless your body's ready. Evening primrose oil, again, it's not an induction. It's a, there is, a lot of midwives who suggest taking it orally your entire pregnancy and then after 36 weeks taking it vaginally. And what it does is it helps smooth out the of cervix. So essentially, like I typically discuss it a lot with the cervical scar tissue discussion, right? Because if you've had cervical scar tissue, it will actually help soften any scar tissue that you might have on your cervix. So there are some great benefits to it. It's some women have experienced get itchy with it. And so obviously if that's happening, you probably would want to just, you know, not do it. There's another thing called borage oil, which is basically the same idea. But I've heard people say that borage oil is actually better. It's a more concentrated thing than evening primrose oil. So, but I think, again, you need to talk to a naturopath or your midwife about taking that. I wouldn't just go to the store and buy some because it comes in the little tiny pills, you know, the little sugar pills is one of the ways that you can take it. And you don't want it, the directions on the side of the bottle are not for labor induction, you know, so it's not going to tell you appropriately how to take it and how much and how often and all of those things. So you need to make sure you talk with a professional about that.
Good advice.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for being here, Dawn. It was fun talking to you. Tell us a little bit more about improvingbirth.org.
Well, it's a nonprofit organization that is working to reduce the unnecessary induction and unnecessary C-section in this country. It's currently right now at 32%, which means more than one in three women are having cesareans. Mm-hmm. And the induction rate is even higher than that. It's 42%. So, you know, we're just trying to bring awareness.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Here's a question for one of our experts.
Hi, my name is Heidi, and I'm calling from Chicago. I'm hoping that one of your experts can talk a bit about delayed cord clamping. My husband and I are planning to give birth at a hospital, and my OBGYN is pretty traditional when it comes to the whole labor and delivery process. They're not sold on the idea of waiting to cut the cord, and I've heard that there are a lot of benefits to doing this. Can you talk about the benefits and any risks that I should be concerned about? Thank you so much.
Here is a response from our doula, Care Messer.
Hi, Nicole. Early cord clamping, there's a lot of information on it, so I'm going to try and summarize it for you. It's relatively new. It's from the 1940s. It's practiced in only a few countries, but it's standard practice here in America. Studies show that half of your baby's blood volume remains in the placenta at the time of birth. And think about it as nature's way of slowly transitioning your baby into breathing and surviving on its own outside the womb. your baby is still getting oxygen through the cord while it's working on taking its first breath. Adequate blood volume is needed to perfuse the lungs, gut, kidneys, skin, and the blood transfusion from the placenta, it's known as placental transfusion, is very important. Especially in preterm infants, research has shown it can decrease the need for blood transfusions and possible brain injury. Gravity does affect the transfer of blood. The optimal transition for this is baby right on mom's chest until that cord pulsation stops. It lets you know that the transfer is complete, and the process usually takes 3 minutes, might be a little longer, and it can also complete in 1 minute. It just varies from baby to baby. The risks are believed to be an increase in jaundice and the fear that the blood will drain back out of the baby if the cord is not clamped. And jaundice is almost certain when a baby gets his or her full quota of blood. There is, however, no evidence in adverse effects from this mild jaundice. Most human babies have some form of jaundice. Where the baby is lifted above the uterus before clamping, like in a cesarean, blood will drain back into the placenta by gravity, guaranteeing these babies are receiving definitely less than their expected blood volume. The consequence of this may be an increased risk in breathing or respiratory distress, and several studies have shown that this respiratory distress condition, which is common in C-section babies, can be completely eliminated when full placental transfusion is allowed. Studies also show that delayed cord clamping can increase fetal hemoglobin, baby's blood volume, and increases the long-term iron stores in babies, so it's really good for them. The most basic argument for placental transfusion or delayed cord clamping is if it were essentially injurious or detrimental to us, then humans would have become extinct long before the invention of the clamping of the cord. Leaving the cord alone has just been done since time began, and it's done all over the world, and everybody's still here. You can learn more about the studies and new findings on delayed cord clamping from watching a short four-part series on YouTube called Delayed Cord Clamping Grand Rounds with Dr. Nick Fogelson, or checking out a site, there are several sites, but one called birth-brain-injury.org. There's some great illustrations and diagrams to explore on that site. I hope that helps. There's a lot of information out there, so good luck in making your decision. Bye.
That wraps up our show for today. If you have a pregnancy topic you'd like to suggest, we would love to hear it. Visit our website, preggypals.com, and send us an email through the contact link. And if you have any questions about today's show or the topics we discussed, call our Preggy Pals hotline at 619-866-4775, and we'll answer your questions on an upcoming episode. Thanks for listening to Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.